Welcome to Our House with one of Australia's leading auctioneers, Rod Amos, and buyer's agent, Matt Sharp. And now for your dose of information and observation about real estate across the nation. Let's go live to your host, the voice of the National Rugby League, Steve Allen.
Yeah, welcome. Episode 6, and coming to you live from the office of Ray White Terrigal. And thank you, as always, to Sean and Christy Hudson-Smith. This episode, LeBron James, his brand new pad in the Hollywood Hills, worth almost $37 million. And of course, he won with the LA Lakers against Miami in the NBA playoffs. A listener question about flipping homes. How long should you wait before you sell, and how much should you invest on a renovation? And our property spotlight. We're off to a stunning, magical location around about 3.5 hours north of Sydney, Boomerang and Bluey's Beach. It is absolutely gorgeous. And we head for Albury, a fantastic town with great people where I worked in the late 1980s. It's around about 3 hours north of Melbourne on the New South Wales Victorian border. Just a quick disclaimer, the information in this episode is general in nature and should not be relied upon, and please see a professional if you're considering any investment. All right, let's get down to business. Alongside me, Rod Amos, famous auctioneer from Ray White Terrigal and also real estate agent. Good afternoon to you.
A good afternoon, Steve, and a good afternoon. Let's make it an evening to you as well, Matt Sharp.
G'day, boys. Excited to be here again for another week.
Sharpie, can you say live on the air what your week's been like?
No. And some. I've come in here flustered. It's hot. I've been walking the baby around the streets of Wombril for the last hour. I'm on the phone. I'm off the phone.
And Rod just took photos of you, like a sequence where we thought you might have been closing a deal.
Yeah, don't be a buyer's agent.
In the last week, we've had the federal budget. What are your observations from what was handed down last Tuesday?
Well, coming out, prior to the federal budget, we had, without any surprise, the Reserve Bank keep our fixed interest rate down, Matt, to that still ridiculous 0.25%. How low do they go? Federal budget, look, there was not really a great deal in it for housing or for real estate, and I think that's a very fair call. Most of what's in there is for job creation, employment and wages is what drives real estate and the housing market as well too, so I think a good call there. The only thing that's happened is an extension of the first home loan deposit scheme. We're down to 5%, I believe, Matt, as far as deposit goes in order to facilitate a first home buyer.
Yeah, correct. And I think that's a great incentive for first home buyers out there across Australia to try and get a foot on the property market.
Yeah, I'm going to sound old school here, but you know, if my father-in-law had his way, we'd be saving a whole lot more. What are your thoughts, Sharpie?
Look, you do need to be careful. If you only have a 5% deposit, it does put you at risk if there is a fluctuation in the property market. It does put you at risk at, you know, being in a negative equity position. So you do need to be very careful there. But where prices are at the moment, you know, I think that this is probably the best idea that the government can do and the biggest help that they can provide for first home buyers.
All right, let's put our foot to the floor. What caught your eye this week?
What caught my eye was actually a property that was listed by Ray White Terrigal, and by in no way is this a plug for the agency, even though they do great stuff. But there's a property in North Avoca that's just come on. It's an original beach shack. I think it was built in 1968. Maybe earlier. It's on 1,877 square meters, potential development site, lakeside, which is rare in itself, and about 300 meters walk to the beach. And I know how sought after North Avoca is. Very, very difficult to price. It's very difficult for me to quantify value for this because it's so unique. Very, very interested to see where this one lies.
Well, coming on the back of Tim Andrews' fabulous result just a little bit further up the road on Saturday, where that property sold for over $2.3 million. Tim doing the auction. Expect a very strong demand on this. And it is one of those unique ones that's been held by the same family, Matt, for 50 years. There's about five of the family involved. And what they want to do is, before it goes to responsibility of 14 grandchildren trying to work out what to do with it, is to just realise the potential with the market.
So who buys it? Who's going to buy this property? Like, original, for the listeners out there, it's a complete original. Looks like 3-bed, 1-bath on a huge, huge block. Both neighbours either side look like they've subdivided.
The one I see it happening, we're going to get strong interest from Sydney. We're getting some very high-end interest from some fairly notable high-profile people already on that one, Matt. But there's no doubt that that is going to be subdivided. I'd like to, you could think that somebody might be able to just take advantage of full 1,800 square metres, but at one end, you're closest to the beach across the road to View Street. the lower end, you're going to have waterfront reserves onto Avoca Lagoon there. And again, you're going to be able to realise a really stunning build and not risk overcapitalising in that location.
Hey, boys, for our listeners around Australia and also across the world, because we've had listeners from the US, I think I said last week we've had listeners in Belgium, all over the place, and we thank everyone for tuning in. Tell them about North Avoca, Matt. What's so special about it?
Don't tell anybody anymore. It's always been my surf spot, or had been my surf spot until it's become everybody's surf spot over the last 40 years.
It's just a tucked away little suburb on the back of Terrigal, over the hill. Not too many people know about it, but it is becoming more popular. It does have some good surf there. I know Rod likes getting out there every now and again, but it's really, really just, it's become on the radar of a lot of people from Sydney now. It really has been, because it's nice and quiet, laid back, and just a stone's throw from Terrigal.
Who's the listing agent?
Sean Hudson-Smith is the lucky man to have recruited that property to take it to market. It's going to go to auction in another 4 weeks. Response, as you'd expect, has been staggering. And it is a unique opportunity. It's probably the largest parcel of undercapitalised land you'll find in North Avoca. I'm certainly running through my database and finding which of mine would be ideally suited for this particular property. And Matt's waving his arm in the air saying Matt's already got the buyers for it.
I actually had a buyer that would seriously consider this, but I just don't think that the house is suitable enough for him. I think it's too big of a renovation. One observation that I always see from sales agents, and I'll just get my guard up here. I don't want Rod to throw a pen or something at me. Sales agents, right? And this is something, and again, like, they have their buyers, which is fine. But some sales agents refer to their buyers as clients. Like, can you elaborate on that for me?
Well, it is. I mean, you're basically building a relationship. I might have people that you've been working with 12, 18 months, if not longer, who are after a particular type of property and relying on myself and probably every other agent in Terrigal as well, too, to advise them as soon as something that meets those expectations. And the beauty with the electronic age these days is we can keep up to date with them. Everybody goes to the database with the criteria of what they're looking for, and anything that closely matches is generally advised to buy before it even hits realestate.com or domain.
Yeah, of course. But I guess just the thing with me is, okay, so the buyers are the clients, or leads, that's what the sales agents refer to as buyers, some sales agents, but your client's actually the vendor, right? The person selling the home. So, you know, you can't have it both ways.
That is the fiduciary responsibility of the agent. Certainly each and every call must be made in what's the best interest of the vendor and buyers. Be aware of this. The agent's responsibility is the vendor, and each decision made, each conversation discussed must benefit the vendor.
So who's the client?
Well, the client is anybody that interacts with you and deals with you on a day-to-day basis. The most important person is certainly the vendor. They're the one that holds the ultimate responsibility. But in any good business, I think anybody interacts with you, we should regard as a client, ACCA, or a customer.
Yeah, fair call. And like, the vendors are the one that are paying you guys as well, right? So technically they are your client.
That's it indeed. And they're also very important to our vendors as well, because without the right buyer, the vendor doesn't have the result that they're hoping to achieve.
Has that covered it for you, Sharpie?
Yeah, it has. I mean, anyone that you come into interaction with, is that also the cafe, the barista's the client as well? Like, the sales agents can just have all clients. They've got them everywhere, the hairdresser.
All right, so you've covered that. Let's go a little further north. So a dear friend of the Our House show is Chantelle Lang Chadwick. As Rod knows, her dad is a life-saving legend. He's in the Australian Life-Saving Hall of Fame and kind of like a second dad to me and everyone else at North Entrance, the great Cole Lang and his wife Lorraine. Now, she posted something the other day. Chantelle Lang Chadwick sold, 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 $1,150,000. So it's 5 Bondi Road, the entrance north. But, you know, this really puts things in perspective. She said, such a pleasure to sell her neighbour's home. So many fond memories of Sam and Leone watching her children learn to ride their bikes, water fights, and a whole lot more in an amazing street. 20 years of friendship, and thank you for trusting me with your gem. Now, she says this is a 20-year-old original Clarendon home, and she says there's been some phenomenal sales in the neighbourhood. 97 Hutton Road, a 3-bedroom property, went for $990,000. A 3-year-old build at 17 Coogee Ave that went for $1,210,000. So she says the 20-year home is just remarkable compared to a home that's 3 years old.
As you say, when we're talking about international residences and locations, Bondi Road, Florida Street, it doesn't get much better than North Entrance.
Are you surprised the way the market just keeps bubbling along on the Central Coast?
I am a little bit surprised. I mean, it was all doom and gloom 3 to 4 months ago, and, you know, it's the complete opposite. Things are very, very competitive here with the buyers that we're both seeing, both Rod and myself, in multiple suburbs. It's not just isolated for one suburb, and obviously there's a huge attraction there. there, the closer you are to the beach, the more interest there's going to be. There's no doubt. But yeah, certainly it is surprising, and I don't see it really slowing down anytime soon.
All right, earlier we did What Caught Your Eye, but I want to throw this one in because today the LA Lakers have rolled Miami 4-2 in the NBA Finals. LeBron, an absolute superstar. The final score, 106-93. So LeBron wins three championships at different franchises. But also, LeBron, I've downloaded the LA Times app on my phone and also the New York Times because I love some of the sports journalism. But in the property section, LeBron's picked up a 1930s home with two guest houses, a screening room, a swimming pool, tennis court. Now the king has a new castle. It's a Mediterranean-style compound. The price, oh, by the way, in the Beverly Hills post office area, have a guess. What do you reckon it's cost him?
Oh, I have absolutely no idea, but I'm just going to say $21
million. Keep going.
$31
million. Yeah, keep going.
$36
million? $36.75 mil. And it was sold by the estate of Lee Philip Bell, the talk show host and also the creator of the program The Young and the Restless, who passed away earlier this year.
Oh, wow. How interesting. And I wonder if the Lakers boys are back there right now celebrating.
Let me give you the Australian conversion. That is approximately $50 million in Australian dollars.
Yeah. The other one, Matthew Perry. So he put a property on the market. It was a penthouse, and that was in Century City. But he's put his Malibu home on the market, $14 million. He's after. By the way, with his penthouse that he put on the market, he's dropped the asking price by about $8 million.
Jeez, shout out to Matthew Perry. It sounds like he needs another show. They're doing it tough over there.
And just finally, how the other half lived, Gina Davis.
We're talking about a car taking a plunge down the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, we all love Thelma and Louise. Brad Pitt had a little brief cameo in that as well as the cowboy.
How old was Brad Pitt in that movie? 10?
22.
Gina Davis has sold her home in Pacific Palisades. $5.63 million. She was there for 13 years. She paid $4.2 million.
After 13 years to only show about a 25% profit on the property, I wouldn't say that was very selective, clever buying, would you?
No, I wouldn't, mate. No, I wouldn't. I would have expected it to increase far more than that.
All right, so there we go. That's what's happening in LA as we speak. I'll cover off New York next week when I check out their property report. Rod, what's happening around the nation with auctions?
It slipped a few percentage points across Greater Sydney on the weekend. We were down from 77% down to 74% clearance. But one of the areas leading the charge and pretty much right at the top of the number two in the pack was Central Coast at 77.6%. Now a median sale through price is $690,000. The closest one to where we are at Terrigal was the property McGrath, sold on the entrance road for $575,000 to one and one only bidder. Across the rest of the Sydney regions was Northwest that stole the crown from the Northern Beaches with 85.3%. Medium house price of $1.5 million. Northern Beaches still recorded 1.82 was the highest price, and that certainly eclipsed the rest of the areas.
What's happening with auctions around the country now? Have you got state-by-state information?
Well, the gold's not going to New South Wales or Sydney. The gold this week again went to Adelaide, 87% clearance, and that's actually dropped, would you believe, Sharpie, from 90% last weekend.
Unbelievable. So how many were listed there in Adelaide? 39 compared to 13 last week, is that right?
Yeah, so the previous week it was 13. 39. So, I mean, big numbers. Bear in mind, Melbourne's still in that lockdown, not much happening at auction, and only a 62% clearance in Melbourne. Canberra, 84%, so coming in second. So it goes to show, as strong as the Sydney market is, we're really behind the pace when it comes to Canberra and Adelaide and the auction area.
And you know what I find really interesting with these numbers is virtually all of these, except for Melbourne, obviously, virtually all of them compared to this time last year are up in 2020.
That's right, with the exception of Sydney and Melbourne are both behind all the other states, that being Queensland, South Australia and ACT are well and truly up. So as far as the COVID knocking the wind out of the market, I think you'd have to say not quite true, with the exception of Sydney and Melbourne.
Okay, boys, let's get to our questions this week. And Olivia has sent this one to us via MP3. Now, if you'd like to do the same, simply go to info@sayafewwords.com.au. That's info@sayafewwords.com.au. Olivia from Terrigal, take it away.
Hey guys, my name's Olivia. I'm from Terrigal. I'm 20 years old. I've got a couple questions in regards to flipping properties. My parents have bought a few properties in the past. I just want to get some advice on saving tips and not spending too much on the renovations. And I was hoping you guys could help me out.
Hey, Olivia, thanks so much for the question. Look, I'm not an experienced flipper. It's not my preference, but a couple of key things that I always would look at, and I know some people that have been successful flipping houses always look at, is in terms of overcapitalizing, you probably don't want to spend any more than 10% of the property's value on the renovation. You also want to make sure that...
Is that your phone? Could that be the deal about to be closed?
It's still happening. It's still going. Yeah, it never ends. It's now late, 6 o'clock, and we're still getting calls.
Hey, do you need a good lie down? Like, do you need some therapy at the moment?
Oh, mate, you don't want to get inside this head. There's a bit of noise.
Where were you? Olivia's question. You said the 10% rule. Do you agree, Rod?
Look, there's that. The other thing, important thing, Olivia, is that don't limit yourself to the Central Coast. What you want to do is ensure you have as much equity as your deposit, because that's what's going to benefit you and that's what's going to profit. So if you buy outside of the area for half the price, you're going to have literally twice the deposit. So your returns are going to be double. And also, if you're being able to put twice the deposit in, that is really going to balance out with a much better equity in the property and far greater returns as far as your rental income goes.
Yeah, and on one of the previous episodes, we said that Sharon and I, we lived in Sydney, but our investment property was in Pottsville. So not far from Cabarita, not far from Tweed Heads, just a sensational location, great surf spot too. But, you know, compared to Sydney prices, it was like, I couldn't even tell you off the top of my head, maybe it was less than 200K. And we've had the property for over 20 years. So, you know, the thing with Olivia is maybe look at Zoe that we spoke about in earlier episodes. She's actually bought her first home now in Griffith. Now, she won't live there forever, but she was able to buy a property for just over 300, Matt.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I mean, one thing that people forget when they're purchasing property as well is the additional costs, right? You know, you have your stamp duty, you have your legal fees, you have everything else that goes with it. So you almost are already behind the eight ball the day that you move in, and that's something that you need to factor in whenever you are looking to flip a home. And then also... then when you sell it, there's agents fees, there's capital gains tax. So all of these additional costs need to be factored in and to see whether or not you're going to profit or not.
When she talks about flipping, how long should she hold for, do you believe?
Oh, now look, I'm a buy and hold investor, right? That's what I am. And if I'm going to add value to a property, I add the value and then I hold the property for the long term, because then they can leverage off that capital into another property. But look, there's horses for courses. Some people will say to buy and flip as quick as you can to move it on. Others will say there's a magic time around the 12 months. But yeah, that's a very difficult question.
Yeah, well, Sharpie, at the moment you're like an unmade bed, but you've got another listener question that's coming our way. Tell us more.
I do. And this is a good one for the investors out there, actually. So this one comes in from Michael from Newcastle. Hey guys, loving the show. I'm looking at putting a granny flat in my backyard to add some value to my property and to gain a rental income at the same time. Is this a good investment idea? What do you guys think?
Well, first and foremost, if you've got the property, make sure and check with council that it is approved for granny flat. The sufficient size of the boundaries of the access to it do enable you to do a granny flat development. And from that point on, then go and do a bit of a reference check on other granny flats around there as to what the return is. So you need to find out what the return is. And from there, get a quote done to construct the granny flat, provide the services to it. Generally, you're looking from somewhere $160,000 to $200,000 for a good two-bedroom, quite contemporary granny flat. What you need to do is look at the income versus the cost, and that is your return on that as well.
Yeah, great answer there, Rod. And I'll just add to it as well. You need to see whether or not there's an appetite for people that want to stay in a granny flat or rent out a granny flat as well. One huge mistake that I see with people that put granny flats in their backyard is the actual block isn't suitable for a granny flat. You know, there may not be side access, or there may not be a driveway, or there may not be dual access. Not everyone wants to live in someone else's backyard, right? So I see people do some really, really good things and creative things with particular blocks that would really suit a granny flat and the original dwelling. So I think a few of those things you need to really consider before you build a granny flat.
There's nothing worse than having a granny flat build on a property and then finding that both people lose their privacy. The other point being, in many areas, you will devalue your property's value by having a granny flat. There's only so many purchasers out there that would rather have a granny flat than a pool or a nice big entertaining cabana, or potentially extend the home to become a bigger, more salubrious family home.
That's a very, very good point, because some sales agents will say, oh, you can add all this value by putting a granny flat in the backyard, and some buyers out there can be misled, because that's certainly not the case, because not everyone wants a granny flat in the backyard, right? And I think as a general rule, yeah, you can lose money with a granny flat in the backyard, but sometimes you're only really adding, you know, dollar per dollar of value. You know, if you're going to spend $100,000 or $150,000 on a granny flat, you know, that might only increase the property's value by that same amount of money. And in some cases, it may not even be enough.
All right, boys, we've covered Michael from Newcastle. Any more comments about the granny flat in the backyard?
Do your research, do your comparisons, and make sure you get out there and see if it is valid for your property and its potential resale in 10 or 20 years.
I tell you, it's gone off the Richter scale, though, in the last few years.
Absolutely. And if there is a lack of stock or lack of properties available, and for the right block, it can be certainly very, very lucrative.
Dare I say, the more granny flats are out there, the less desirable they become because you get the saturation point.
All right, boys, so we're off to a couple of places with our property spotlight. We're going to go to beautiful Blueies and Boomerang Beach, where we celebrated our son's 21st birthday. We actually hired a house called The Point, and it was equidistant. It was about 3 minutes down the hill to Boomerang Beach, a beautiful, gorgeous, magical surf spot, and Blueies, 4 minutes in the southern direction. What a sensational spot, Rod.
Look, there's some of the best surf beaches around. There's some of the best family beaches, Elizabeth. And Matt, from what I understand, you've seen some of the beaches yourself around there, particularly around the Elizabeth Beach area.
Yeah, and you might have seen a little too much.
Yeah, my wife and I were up there a couple of years ago, enjoying both Boomerang and Blueies, as you do. And the surf was quite flat one day, and we thought, oh, let's go and explore and just see what else is out there. And we literally just looked up on Google Maps, and we could see this little beach called Shelley Beach, and I think it faces like northwest.
Faces northwest. That's in an onshore day. It'll be completely out of the wind.
Yeah, and that was what we thought, right? So there's this track, there's this long trail, and we thought, oh, we'll go up there and we'll just see what's down there. Nice and secluded beach. So we've walked up there, and it's a fair walk. It's probably about a 5 to 10 minute walk off the main road. And as we get down and we're walking down the hill, we can see some people down there, right? Probably around 20 or 30 people. And we get down onto the sand, and as we're getting closer...
Hold it. Let me cue the music.
So as we get down onto the sand and we're starting to get a little bit closer, we're starting to notice that we're probably around 35 years younger than everyone else on the sand, right?
All old blokes?
Oh, there's a couple of old females out there too, and we're getting a bit closer. We've literally realised it's a dead set nudist beach, right? There is not a dead set stitch of clothing on anyone on this beach except for us.
So what did you do? D-robe?
Well, I kept sort of walking, and then I've just ended up, you know, when you can sort of sense that someone's sort of next to you, I've realised that Jackie's not anywhere near me. I stop. She's just frozen, like 15 metres back. Mate, you can feel the eyeballs, not only on her, but on me as well. I got all the oldies looking at me, just waiting, and all the old blokes are looking at Jackie, just waiting for her to get the gear off.
And Rod, have you been there?
No, but look... I know of the beach, and the political correct description is a naturalist beach. Thank you very much, Matt. And it is a declared one. It's a recognised one. It's an approved one as well, too. And it's out of the way. And I reckon good luck to those people that want to get sunburnt where I don't want to get sunburnt.
Mate, one of the most magical spots you've ever seen. Like Rod said, hidden out of the wind, nice and protected. But we ended up just, we didn't want to just turn around and leave. So we've just gone, oh, okay, let's just sit down somewhere and just sort of hang out. But no, the gear didn't come off. I was like, I don't know, what do we do? Like, should we just get it off? But the wife was thinking, you know, maybe if the age gap was 5 years, but it was about 35, so she wasn't too keen.
We all left Boomerang saying we can't wait to go back. And it was one of the best weekends we've ever had for all of us. There was, under COVID restrictions, we could only have 20 in the house. So we just had an absolute blast. And, you know, we started sniffing around for property. There was a home just across the road that I've got no idea what it would go for, but it would have had panoramic views of Blueies Beach. Probably real estate at its best, Rob, because it was the worst home in the best street. Elevated. You would have had to do a lot of work. But pretty hard to judge what Boomerang Beach is like because... So far this year, 13 sales. Last year, 16. The year before, 13. It's really hard to gauge with so few sales.
It's very deceptive. There's a median sale price of $640,000, but there's also some, not regarded as units, but self-contained homes, I suppose, through those van parks and all that I believe are regarded as a home on the sale side.
Yeah, you're spot on, because they'd be the sale here for 140, 177. By the way, before you pick up again, Rod, in 2019, their growth was 251.5% because there was a $2,950,000 sale.
That was a big one on the southern headland, right above the toilet block. You get to have a view over the toilet block at the south end, or the galvanised toilet block at the south end of Boomerang Beach. But I recall that sale, and it's just right up the escarpment there. It's got perfect northerly views. And that's a difficulty when we're monitoring figures, isn't it, Matt? With an area with as few sales as that, it takes one big sale one year or one small one to completely skew what's seen to be a medium mean figure.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why you need to dig down on that median price as well and really have a look to see what's actually sold in that area and compare apples with apples. You know, like a one-bedroom, small little flat that's selling for $100,000 is going to drag that median house price down, isn't it?
Well, one thing I can say is the prices do appear to be somewhat more affordable. There's one property I'm looking at, 4 Karamata Close. That was 4 bedrooms, 2 bathroom, double lock-up garage with the walkout, your covered entertaining area straight into the swimming pool. Quite new, contemporary. That one sold at $1,080,000. And 4 Karamata, that would only be about a 6 or 7 minute walk to Boomerang Beach from that home.
Yeah, and we saw like a house for around the $500,000 mark, and it was literally maybe 1 minute to the sand. Just for our audience, Boomerang Beach would be from the central coast of New South Wales, 2 hours to the turnoff. So from Sydney, you're probably looking at maybe 3 or just 3.5 hours to get to Boomerang Beach.
And there's no longer the Bulladilla Bends. When I used to start going surfing up there in the 70s, was like a 4.5 hour trip up there.
Have we got numbers on Blueys or just Boomerang?
Blueys is very similar to Boomerang Beach, both the sales figures. And in fact, these figures reflect it. When you print it out, it's a one postcode. It doesn't take into account Pacific Palms. And if, let's say a little shout out, Pacific Palms Rec Club right on the water there too, on the lagoon, the absolutely perfect location, great family set up there for the bistro, restaurant, a couple of beers around the outside tables there. Affordable, the only difficulty again with it might be affordable, you're pretty hard pushed for most forms of employment unless you have a high paying corporate job. You can now work from home 5 days a week.
Yeah, and they had the New South Wales Surfing Championships, the Masters up there, and some of the best surfers, former pro tour surfers, they were all there, and the surf was going ballistic. They reckon one of the days was about 8 to 10 foot.
And they've just had the juniors up there as well too, over the last, going back just prior to the school holidays, junior surfing pro-am.
When areas are getting way too busy, and so you hear a lot of people from where we live, the Central Coast, that want to head up north to places like this that remind them of what it used to be back in the 70s. Like, it's not overdeveloped. It's that kind of idyllic lifestyle, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the best surfing spots up there, that little stretch, like you start at sort of Treachery and then go to Seals Rocks and then you end up heading north to sort of Blueys and then Boomerang. Yeah, really, really good spot. I love going up there as well.
So just finally, Matt, we've got some unit numbers as well. This is surprising because we feel like it's mostly homes. Holiday homes?
Yeah, there are a couple of units up there up around Boomerang, and the median house price up there for a unit is $462,000. You know, they've had a bit of slow growth over the last sort of 12 months, coming back around 4.6%. But I think up there, like if you could get a nice little unit, walking distance to the beach, you know, you could potentially holiday let it, Airbnb it. You know, you can make the most of it yourself and enjoy it yourself as well.
And we mentioned about Blueys Beach, so the median price there is $545,000. 13 sales this year, 13 last year, just 7 the year before. So tightly held. And it's also, what, around about 20, 25 minutes from Foster?
Yeah, it's only 20 minutes up the Great Lakes Way to Foster. You go through along 7 Mile Beach there, and you look, that's a beauty. You've got the Wallace Lakes on one side, you've got the ocean on the other side. It is idyllic. One thing that surprised me when you looked at it is the fact that Blueys Beach has sold more properties than Boomerang, because undoubtedly there's more freestanding homes in Boomerang than Blueys. So surprising the way it shifts like that, isn't it?
Okay, so we've looked at Blueys, we've looked at Boomerang, and I tell you, I could just go there and chill for the rest of my life.
Agreed. I love it up there too.
I have had the left-hander off the point there. It would have been 7 or 8 foot one time with only 3 other guys out, a couple of Foster guys who were nice enough to say hello and share waves with me. And it was breaking right round the headland. I've never seen it do that before, and it was running half the way down the beach. The good thing with it is you get that rip paddle out alongside the headland. So even when it's big, the water flowing back out the headland, even though you're paddling out about 300 mil away from the rocks, but it actually makes for a fairly reasonable paddle out compared to most beach breaks.
And I've had an unbelievable day up there as well at Seals Rocks in my old job, corporate job. Shout out to Tony Bryden as well, who you guys might know. We were heading up north and he just rung me as we were on the freeway heading up. He said, mate, go into Seals Rocks, ring me when you get there. I think there might be a wave there. I've driven all the way in, as we know, off the Lakes Way. I think it's about 40 minutes. It's absolutely firing. I think it was like a Monday. And I just said, mate, you need to get in here. I've got barely any reception, so I can barely call him. I just said, mate, I'll see you out there.
Are you talking about the right-hander off the island?
The right-hander off Seals Rocks. There would have been maybe half a dozen guys out there on a Monday. We surfed out there. Myself and Brido surfed out there for about 2.5 hours. We come in, had a bit of a feed. I was corked and just was watching it as I was eating lunch and went, nah, we've got to go back out. We ended up going back out there.
That is 5 to 6 days a year it works like that.
Yeah, yeah, I have heard that. Brido's a bit of a legend up around that area. I know he travels up there a bit to surf, but a couple of locals again, we just sort of let those guys have their waves and we just picked up the scraps, but don't worry, the scraps are pretty good.
Yeah, and my son and his girlfriend from California, Queen Bee, Beatrix Thomas, shout out to her. They just went up there last week camping and they got some epic waves, but we can't tell you the exact location where they surfed, otherwise people won't be happy with us. All right, that's Boomerang and Blueies. Now, before we wrap up the show, we're going to head down to Albury Wodonga. Now, when I was 18, can you believe I left the Gold Coast and travelled 1,500 kilometres south to work at my second radio station, which was 1494 2AY on the AM band in Albury. And, you know, it was really tough. I've got to be honest. They're the hard yards you do when you're young. You say yes to everything and you try to learn your craft as quickly as you can. But while I was in that town, I started playing AFL for the famous Albury Tigers. I played water polo for the first time ever for the Albury Tigers. As a sporting area, it is phenomenal. And I'll say this, that even though I was there for 18 months, I made friends for a lifetime. You know, that's the beauty of places like that. They embrace you. So I was down there at Christmas. People knew that I was a long way from home. So the Eames family, shout out to them. They invited me in to celebrate Christmas with them. And we've been friends ever since. But, you know, that's the kind of town it is. By the way, famous people from Albury. Margaret Court, the tennis player. Also Lisa Ho, the fashion designer. Lauren Jackson, superstar basketball player. Lee and Tanya Kernaghan. Now, I knew them. They used to do outside broadcasts with the radio station before they were famous, and they were two of the nicest people you'd ever meet. Brett Kirk, Captain Kirk, the superstar from the Sydney Swans, also from that area, and the list goes on and on. But what are we seeing in terms of property, Rod?
Well, look at this one. I'm going back here. Richard Roxburgh, one of our most famous theatrical serious actors in Australia, hails from that fine town. Well, look, one interesting thing when you suggest you research Albury is it's a twin city, isn't it? There's Albury Wodonga and some pretty amazing demographic history to that. That was actually proposed in the 1970s to get rid of the population. Matt, you know the way we're now thinking about ways we've got to start to depopulate these urban centres like Sydney and Melbourne, the capital city, spread the population out, conserve resources, not have the pressures. Well, the Whitlam government tried doing it. They identified Orange and Bathurst and Albury Wodonga. It was proposed that by now we would have a population of over 300,000 in Albury Wodonga. There was a change of government shortly after Whitlam was taken out of power, and that population is only now around about the 100,000, so one third of that proposed. That was very forward-thinking policy when you look back at it. Pity it wasn't successful.
Yeah, so the population there now, Rod, is I think just under 50,000 in Albury, and is it around 35,000 in Wodonga at the moment in the last census?
The current population in the census of 2013, 86,000, so estimated around about 90,000 at this stage. So annual population growth of 1%.
Let's rip in. What numbers are you seeing, Sharpie?
Yeah, well, I'm seeing Wodonga. It's interesting, actually. Like you said, they're twin towns. They just sit either side on the border there, don't they? But the median house price in Wodonga is very, very affordable at $344,000. Now, you know, that to me is very, very attractive. It's a low entry level. It seems like a great option for any first home buyers and even potential investors just to get a foot on the market.
The other surprising thing is you cross the Murray River and the twin towns, the price differential is quite surprising. As you were saying, median price price in Albury of $545,000, crossover median price at $344,000. The other surprising point has been, and it could be related to prices, been three times the volume of property have sold in the last 12 months in Wodonga as it has on the New South Wales side of the river. I don't understand the demographics of all. You live down there. Is Albury regarded as a richer, more high-end area? I suppose that's where the main shopping centre, the hub, the recreational areas are, restaurants, cafes and the main shopping facilities. Maybe that's the reason why higher-end properties are being built on the northern side of the river than the southern side, Steve.
Look, I'm embarrassed to say that I left there in 1989 and I haven't been back. And my wife and my son have both been down there and they had a fantastic time. And, you know, we've still got so many friends that live in the area, the Dowding family, you know, we've reconnected with them because our kids ended up playing water polo together. I played with his dad back in the late 80s. We won a premiership together. You know, I've got no idea how the town has evolved, but, you know, it's a town that people go back to. So there's a lot of people that go to Sydney, you know, to further their career. But they love this place so much that they'll go back.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful town. I spent a fair bit of time down there in a past life as well. But one thing that I did notice, the difference between Albury and Wodonga is Albury's home to some of those beautiful heritage properties, right? So they're very, very attractive to buyers. And obviously there's that scarcity factor as well. So I think that's going to have a major impact on the median house price there.
Just going through some of their biggest sales. So far this year, there's been a $1,925,000 sale in Albury. $2,700,000 last year was the top dollar. And then in 2018, I wonder what this was, $5,450,000. Now, I wonder if it includes, Albury would include some of the outlying big farming properties.
It would be just by that postcode, but it could be fairly extensive, the postcode area there. And that'd be interesting. Again, Matt, you've got the figures there for Wodonga. What's the highest price in the last 12 months in Wodonga?
$1.73 million.
So I'm going to have to surmise that would be an acreage rural property still falling within the precinct of Wodonga, and the same for the 1.9 in Albury. Imagine be a fairly salustrious...
Hey, Rod, what does salustrious mean?
It used to be one word a week I used to make up on the radio. I'd be trying to put two words together. Yeah.
Boys, it's got nothing to do with property, but when I was there, so I was playing with the Albury Tigers, I saw a young man, Ben Doolan, make his debut as a 15-year-old with the Albury Tigers, and he went on to play with Collingwood and also Essendon. While I was there, I probably saw one of the best players I ever saw who never made it to the AFL. Now, you see this all the time, don't you, Sharpie, in footy, a player that's extremely talented. But this guy's name was Pete Wilson, played in the midfield. So we're all teenagers, and he's starting in the midfield with Albury in the Ovens and Murray comp, which so many players walk out of there into the AFL. Such a famous AFL area. Lavington's down there. Across the border, you got Yarrawonga. Brendan Favola played down there recently. So he was getting $10,000 a game with his own club. This is folklore. And then other clubs, they would pay $10,000 for him to go and play at their ground because they make $100,000 over the bar.
Wow. It was that much of a draw card to have somebody of his stature play.
So don't forget, he was leading goal kicker in the AFL. But there we go. I mean, that's got nothing to do with property, but there's some of my great recollections. Like, you know, if I could go back, if I could be a young guy again down there, you know, I mean, I really love playing AFL there, and it improved my game astronomically to play at that level.
Steve, one thing I've got to ask you about the water polo. There's not that many water polo teams in Sydney, let alone the country. If you were playing water polo for Albury Wodonga, how far did you used to have to travel for games?
Yeah, Rod, as far as Wangaratta, which was just under an hour south from Albury, and then most of the games were around town. But I can tell you my first game was actually at the Defence Force. So I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but they built a pool that wasn't quite 50 metres. It might have been 49.999. The reason they did it. Now, I could be wrong about this, but I believe they didn't build it the full length because they didn't want to have to host high-level swimming competitions.
That would be a very fair call. Now, if you were playing, one of your first games you play was defence, how dirty a game was that? Because when I was only 17 years old, I was playing in it for ride water polo, first grade, and we were playing against Sydney Uni, and I'd never had any idea what would go on underwater that the referee would never, ever see.
Yeah, well, now there's underwater cameras. Yeah. So
there wasn't back in the 70s, I can assure you, Steve.
Not a bit of Shelley Beach going on in the water polo, is there?
No, well, this is 76. In 77, I was playing against Sydney Uni. And it was savage. They were serious.
Yeah. Hey, we're getting the wind-up from our producer because I've got to go to a meeting 7 minutes ago. Without making that step in my career, I wouldn't be where I am today because, you know, it was pivotal in where I went in my career. And, yeah, you know, like I said, just brilliant town. So many great people that are still friends today. Yeah, and a shout-out to my mate Rob McLeod, who was there at the same time, or Rod Radio God, as we like to call him. And he's won about 10 Australian Radio Awards for Best Newsreader. So we were both coming through there at the same time, and, you know, just absolute champion. He was a groomsman at our wedding. Boys, we've got to wrap this baby up. That is episode 6 done and dusted. Great to see you, boys. We'll do it all again next week.